Okay, it's what is it, 1 o'clock? It's Thursday, the week after RSA. So yeah, back here doing the zero trust stuff. If you're new to this one, my name is Chase Cunningham. I am Dr. Zero Trust, I guess. And I would like to thank the folks at Wiz Labs for recently putting me on their list of people to follow. I wasn't even aware that that was really a thing, but cool. I appreciate it. I don't know how that happened, but I'll take the win. So, you don't get a lot of wins in life, but when you do get one, take one. So with that being said, let's jump in and move along here on more important things than just me. Now, I was at an analyst firm for a while, if you're not aware of this. Forrester Research was where I was at. And at Forrester Research, we got access to lots of really interesting, potentially life-changing information that you could use if you were to be a less than scrupulous person and trade stocks and do stuff like that. We couldn't do that. I could have made a bunch of money on a few things, but integrity and other issues meant that I couldn't do it, especially because I don't like wearing an orange jumpsuit. However, I couldn't for the life of me figure out, and this is not necessarily cyber. So if you want to bail right now, go ahead and bail. But this is just something that I think with family members. So if you go and look, and I am not partisan, I don't give a shit about either party. I couldn't care less about the party stuff. I personally think 99% of politicians are turds. So like you look at Nancy Pelosi. Now she's rich as all hell. However, she's been in Congress for like 7 billion years because she's old as dirt. She was there when Methuselah was elected or something. How did she become a multi-multi-multi-multi-multi-millionaire? Well, it's interesting that all these things happen and trades happen and then they make money. And then if you look at these other folks, and there was a I'll find the link and put it in here, but there are senators who were privy to information because they sit on committees about Boeing that the day after they got the briefing, mysteriously, their spouses sold a whole bunch of Boeing stock. There's senators and congressmen that sat in on COVID briefings that were classified the day after the COVID briefings. All of a sudden, they're selling stock and they make a whole bunch of money. So it's not the person doing it because that's illegal, but it's not illegal to go home and go, honey, go sell this stock or go buy this stock or whatever else. And it's unscrupulous and it's wrong and it makes me personally question the integrity of every single individual that's up there because it's not right. If analysts can't do it at an analyst firm, why should the people that lead this country be able to get away with it? Maybe there's a way we could look a little deeper into that. Like if you're a member of, the executive branch or judicial or legislative or something, that we keep an eye on your finances for your family members as well. If you don't like that, don't run for office. Because it's obvious that you people can't be trusted to not do illegal, unscrupulous things. Excuse me, not illegal, because y'all wrote the fucking laws that make it not illegal, even though there's, yeah. But anyway, that's just something to know. I'll put the link in here. It's a study that was done. It wasn't partisan in nature, whatever else. Just proves that I think if I remember correctly in the study, that the stock trades of these congressmen and senators beat the best research firms in the world by like 5 to 7% year over year. That doesn't happen. That there's so much research that goes into that stuff, and for these people to get away with it, that doesn't happen. Now, here's where that ties into cyber. Cybersecurity is one of the greatest areas for growth and investment and finances that the world has seen in a long, long time. How much of that stuff is going on where the influence and the lobbying that are taking place in those halls of Congress, where they're writing the legislation to put this stuff in place, is potentially negative in nature or is gaming the system? I will jump in front of a bus if I'm wrong here. I guarantee you that there are people up there in the halls of Congress, in the halls of the Senate, maybe even all the way up to the presidential office, be it Trump or Biden or whoever, that are being lobbied to and influenced and doing things that are less than scrupulous around cybersecurity, stocks, trades, purchases, sells, et cetera, et cetera. It is happening. And that's a problem because that influences the way that we posture, that influences the way that our national security is structured, that influences the ability of our defenders to defend us. Because the system is gamed and it's not cool. Anyway, off my soapbox, on to the next thing. But if you're an American citizen, you should know this stuff and you should be concerned about it. Because it's a problem. That just is what it is. Let's move into some cyber-specific news, because that wasn't cyber-specific, but it was cyber-ish, I guess you could say. Darkreading.com has an article about Nigeria halts cybersecurity attacks after public outrage. Never thought I would have read those words. In the midst of an economy struggling with soaring inflation, the Nigerian government paused plans to place a levy on domestic transactions that was aimed at enhancing cybersecurity. The Nigerian government halted its efforts to fund national cybersecurity improvements through a 0.5% levy on domestic electronic transactions. That would be a big number. After the current administration faced widespread public criticism for increasing taxes during an economic crisis. So no one in Nigeria has ever really studied economics, I guess. As recently as May 6th, the Central Bank of Nigeria directed financial institutions to begin collecting the levy within 2 weeks. Well, they move fast, at least. But following public outcry, President Bola Tinubu pledged to block the tax over the weekend. On May 14th, a senior cabinet member of the administration officially suspended implementation of the measure. Yeah, so there you go. Cyber gets thrown out with the bathwater when taxes and economies and whatever. Maybe they just, did they not realize that there's a Nigerian prince over there with like billions of dollars that's been trying to give it away through phishing stuff for years? They should just ask that cat, like, give us some of that money that you've been trying to send to all those Americans overseas or whatever else. Ask that rich Nigerian prince. He's got the money. That's, you know, at least logically. Office of Public Affairs for the DOJ. U.S. charges Russian national with developing and operating Lockbit ransomware. Alleged Lockbit developer created and operated the most prolific ransomware variant under aliases Lockbit and Lockbit Sup. The U.S. State Department offered a reward of up to $10 million. U.S. Justice Department unsealed charges today against a Russian national for his alleged role as the creator, developer, and administrator of the Lockbit ransomware group from its inception in 2019 through the present. At times, Lockbit was the most prolific ransomware group in the world. So let's see what they say about this cat here. Merrick Garland, blah, blah, blah. Today, we are going to take a step further, charging the individual who we allege developed and administered this malicious cyber scheme, which was targeted 2,000 victims and stolen more than $100 million in ransomware payments. So he's rich. Let's see. As part of our unrelenting efforts, this is a little posturing bullshit, to dismantle ransomware groups and protect victims, the Justice Department has brought over 24 criminal charges against the administrator of Lockbit. Whoopie-doo. Working with U.S. and international partners, we're using our tools to hold ransomware actors accountable. Okay. And we continue to encourage victims to report cyber attacks. Dmitry Yuryevich Khoroshev, also known as Lockbit Sub, Lockbit, and Putin Krab, 31, of Voronezh, I think, Voronezh, I guess, Russia is charged in a 26-count indictment. So you indicted a guy that lives in Russia. Great. And he's got $100 million in his bank. Good luck. As long as he's not stupid enough to leave on his private jet and go to somewhere where we have an extradition treaty, you might as well have written it on toilet paper. But hey, whatever. It's an election year, so make sure you keep posturing all that stuff. There's an article on NBC News. Russia's brazen and intensifying sabotage campaign across Europe. Vladimir Putin is trying to undermine Western support for Ukraine, according to U.S. and European officials. Russia is definitely at war with the U.S., said an analyst. I would say that that's pretty accurate. Russia is conducting a sabotage campaign across Europe in an increasingly aggressive effort by Putin to undermine Western support for Ukraine, seeking to damage railways, military bases, and other sites used to supply arms to Kyiv. The sabotage includes an alleged Russian-backed arson attack on a Ukrainian-linked warehouse in the UK, a plot to bomb or set fire to military bases in Germany, attempts to hack and disrupt Europe's railway signal system, and jamming GPS for civil aviation. The physical sabotage campaign is part of a broader strategy that includes a flood of Russian propaganda and disinformation, increased espionage by Moscow, and efforts to exert political influence in Europe. So, I mean, that, like, if you took the doctrine of declared warfare and you put the line items in it and you put this stuff next to it, it would be like, yes, they have categorically declared war on the United States and our European allies. And how long do you play nice? That's a really good question, because so far it just seems like we play nice no matter what. And we appease people that are literally attacking us. But shouldn't we do something different? And yes, there's hunt forward operations. And I know from working in three-letter agencies that there are people out there doing really good work that are doing everything they can within the bounds of legality to do something. But there needs to be more, and it needs to be something public, I would suggest, because otherwise it doesn't have the impact that you're looking for. A 26-page indictment on a Russian ransomware operator that's worth $100 million, big fucking deal. Boo. Whitehouse.gov has published the 2024 report on the cybersecurity posture of the United States. It's 37 pages. I read through the whole thing. I'll throw the link in here. Y'all can read it yourselves. But I don't know who wrote this, but they should have won a Pulitzer for their ability to kind of finagle the truth, the reality. Strategic environment. In 2023, the strategic environment was characterized by complexity, interconnectivity, and competition. So it's basically the same thing. So five trends in addition to enduring cybersecurity challenges drove the strategic environment from last year. Evolving risk critical infrastructure, ransomware, supply chain exploitation, commercial spyware, and AI. Current efforts, they talk about ONCD, they talk about NCS. Okay, sure. According to this, as detailed in this report, 33 of the 36 initiatives to combat cyber were completed, 92%. So if that's true, that's pretty impressive. Let's see what actions taken by the federal government. Establishing and using cyber requirements to protect critical infrastructure. That obviously worked really well because we didn't have any breaches of critical infrastructure, right? Enhancing federal cooperation partnerships. So what? Improving incident response and preparedness. Okay. Defending federal networks. Strengthening the national cyber workforce. Same stuff. Blah, 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 blah. More of the same stuff. Future outlook. In 2024 and beyond, the federal government will build on accomplishments of the past year. It will be necessary to sustain efforts to enhance the capabilities of sector risk management agencies, strengthen the national cyber workforce, implement incident reporting requirements directed by the CIRCIA, the critical infrastructure reporting thingy, and then go forward from there. Okay. There's not really much in this paper that you would find and be like, wow, that's really earth shattering. But, I mean, they did at least detail the efforts. Talks about the NCSIP, which you're not familiar with. It's the implementation progress. Tells about what agency's doing, which thing. And then it goes down into how those particular requirements have been pushed and accomplished. So some stuff got done, but, you know, I wouldn't give them a gold star, gold sticker. And, again, it wouldn't matter if it was a different leadership group or whatever else. It just is a... It just is what it is. The insurancejournal.com has this article about White House to push cybersecurity standards on hospitals. So don't we already have a bunch of these standards? Like, don't we already have like HIPAA and HITRUST and PII and DCI and PCS and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And we have all this stuff. Why are we putting more legislative crap and more requirements with quotes around it into an already saturated market where people literally can't keep up with what's currently in front of them? Think that's going to help? Let's read this here. So the Biden administration intends to require hospitals to meet minimum cybersecurity standards after a single hack exposed the data of 100 million Americans, even though we already have all those standards. And even though this has already been a thing for like forever, we're going to do it again. We look to putting in place minimum cybersecurity standards. We already have those for hospitals in the near term. We already have those. I'm going to say it again. We already have those. The proposal may extend beyond hospitals, too. The administration intends to issue a notice of proposed rulemaking in coming weeks to bring in minimum cybersecurity requirements for entities that receive money from Medicare and Medicaid. Okay, cool. At least it'll be where the money is, because if you ever want to see people act, do it where the money's at. Medical billings have been affected by 20% fewer procedures. Based on hospital exploitation and hacks. Let's see. In parallel to pushing out rules for hospital security, the Biden administration tends to offer free training. Already have that as well. To 1,400 small rural hospitals across the country, we have that. It's called the internet. They can go look it up, like basic cybersecurity 101. It's free. Yeah, I mean, okay, great. Push more requirements out there, but what's the outcome? And if you were able to tell me categorically that you had a way to vet, validate, verify that this came from this and that we were putting actual teeth to this stuff, I'd be more impressed. But more legislation and publications for the sake of legislation and publications and posturing during election year, it's not going to fix a thing. So there's ways that this could be solved quickly, relatively easily, relatively low cost, without additional bullshit around, you know, users and training and all the other Mickey Mouse crap that we've been trying for so long that doesn't make a lick of difference. The Cyber Safety Review Board published a 34-page paper on the breakdown of what happened for Microsoft. It's actually super interesting. I would suggest anybody go read it. They go through the Entra ID, the enterprise keys, how it worked in Exchange, and then what actually happened, the incident impact, etc. Really good report. I would say if you have time, go check out and read through this. But it's pretty staggering when you read through like the issues that were kind of there were relatively overt in nature, and they honestly should have done better. There's even a story in here, Microsoft victim notification email. Congressman Don Bacon, he's a member of the House of Representatives, currently serves the House Armed Services Committee, so not someone you'd want to get pwned. Congressman Bacon is a member of the House Taiwan Caucus, so you can imagine where the Chinese were involved with that one. As a prominent congressional voice on national security matters, Congressman Bacon is a high-value target, for sure. Microsoft first noticed outreach to Congressman Bacon about, they noticed it, and then they reached out to him, prompting him to change his password. This was sent a month before the FBI contacted him. So Microsoft did this before the FBI. Congressman Bacon thought the password change email looked strange and was potentially fraudulent. So good. He must have paid attention. You know, good for him. So he changed his password directly rather than using the link provided in the notification instructions. Okay, good. He later learned from the FBI that his personal email had also been compromised. The FBI assured him his devices were secure, that he had done nothing wrong. Rather, the intrusion originated from a compromise affecting Microsoft. Microsoft did not advise Congressman Bacon to take any action to protect his account beyond the one email recommending a password change. At some point after the initial password change email, Microsoft sent another, provided details about the intrusion, and they have an actual picture of the thing here. So I don't know that I would hold Microsoft accountable in that particular instance, because they did, I mean, they're Microsoft, and this is a congressman, and they notified him to a degree. So I wouldn't necessarily place the whole blame on that one with Microsoft, but there's probably some assigned blame that could be put there. More insurance shenanigans. Cyber insurers pledge to help reduce ransom payments. Well, yeah, because it's good for them. As ransomware continues, and this is in Britain, in the UK, this article here. So as ransomware continues to pummel Britain, the government cybersecurity agency and three major insurance associations have pledged to offer better support and guidance to victims. How nice of them. Welcome to the party. Goals for the joint initiative include reducing ransomware's profitability for criminals. Good luck. Improving organizations' resilience and ability to repel such attacks and helping victims to more quickly recover. Mm-hmm. Ransomware continues to be the biggest day-to-day thing, problem, et cetera, et cetera. The NCSC does not encourage, endorse, or condone paying ransoms, and it's a dangerous misconception that doing so will make an incident go away for victims of future attacks. Sure. But, I mean, how is an insurance company or insurance provider in the government going to drive down the value and the dollars and cents of what's going on for ransomware operators? I mean, that one ransomware operator dude living in Russia that we just charged $100 million at least has been, you know, touched by him. For $100 million, folks, you can live a pretty nice, pretty safe life that doesn't require you to travel anywhere you want to, you don't want to go, especially in somewhere like Russia. Like $100 million there becomes like $1 billion. So yeah. Forbes had this article, which I thought was kind of comical. The cybersecurity implications of Gen Z's tech-savvy life cycle. Now, I don't know the author here, and I'm not making a knock on him personally, but I don't think that this dude has kids. I have kids, and I will tell you that they are not tech-savvy. All of them use technology, but none of them care to know or understand unless they really have a reason to, how technology, especially wireless stuff and their phones and all that, work. If you asked any of them, go find 100 Gen Z folks and said, explain the OSI model to me, they would probably stroke out or lick their lips and walk away. They're not technically savvy. They just know how to use apps and devices. This article talks about that they are digital first. Absolutely. That they need cybersecurity education. Sure. I think they get that now in school. They're big on mobile device usage. Mobile device should be secured. Gen Z should be encouraged to enable multi-factor auth. Yeah, that's the one thing I would say from having kids that are in that space, is they are more open to using things like MFA because they just see it as another app. And that's kind of a good thing. As far as anything beyond that, they don't really understand how it works or what they should do with it. Privacy conscious behavior. I don't agree with that at all. Have you seen what people put on TikToks? I mean, you can see everything about them. You can see their room background. You can see them posting about their birthdays. And it's on a Chinese owned app too. And they know that it's on a Chinese owned app. So I don't think that I would agree with that one. Gig economy, remote work. Yeah, that's how they want to work. Activism and social engagement. Sure. Like, they're big on activism, social engagement. They use social for all that stuff. Fine. But I mean, y'all go read this article and tell me what you think. I think that this is not very, very realistic when you actually have kids or know people that are in that particular generation and see what they do daily online. They're not tech savvy. They're tech users. Now, they are way more tech savvy than most of like our parents, the people that are in their 60s and 70s and 80s, but they are not tech savvy. They are just good users of technology. That's just my two cents, but I have kids that are doing this. Now, Palo Alto Networks announces major cybersecurity partnership with IBM, acquires QRadar SaaS assets. There used to be a thing called an antitrust law, and I don't see how these companies that are this large anymore are able to do this stuff without being brought in front of Congress or whoever with an antitrust hearing. Oh, but wait a minute. Maybe it's got something to do with the fact that Congress and the senators are trading on all these things and they make money off of it. Maybe that's why this happens the way that it does. Just a thought, just like a crazy conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat weirdo type thought. I don't know. Maybe I'm way wrong. This article says Palo Alto Networks and IBM on Wednesday announced a significant partnership in which two companies will jointly provide cybersecurity solutions, and IBM will deliver consulting services across Palo Alto's platforms. So deeply in bed together, drinking each other's dirty bathwater. The new partnership has several noteworthy aspects. IBM said it will expand its deployment of Palo Alto network security platforms internally, and the cybersecurity vendor will be its preferred partner for network cloud and security operations center SOC offerings. IBM said it will also work with Palo Alto on security operations, DevSecOps, and threat management. In addition, the tech giant will train over 1,000 security consultants on the migration, deployment, and adoption of Palo Alto products. The company has announced that IBM Consulting will be a preferred MSSP for Palo Alto customers, and they will set up a joint SOC and a cyber range. Mm-hmm. IBM's experts with global, regional, and local delivery capabilities will use WatsonX, blah, 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 a bunch of stuff about them or whatever. Palo Alto's networks will integrate IBM's Watson AI and Cortex X XSIAM platform. Okay. Yeah. Hotbed of activity, two other players, Exabeam. Yeah. So there's lots of stuff going on. So the Exabeam and Thoma Bravo's LogRhythm revealed their plans to merge. Okay, so there's that going on as well too. Okay, I mean, sure, great, maybe it'll help some people out, but there's so much consolidation and so much big company stuff going on here that they're just buying everybody out, and then you couldn't do this in the 90s. I don't know anyway. And then lastly here, before I talk about RSA real quick, article on the record, cyber threat landscape permanently altered by Chinese operations, all about Vol Typhoon. And here's what you need to know about this. And this is from the article. Even if the U.S. government eventually ejects a notorious Chinese hacking operation that is tunneled into critical infrastructure entities, the sweeping digital campaign has permanently altered the cyber threat landscape. Vol Typhoon remains a major focus of federal national security leaders who have scrutinized the group's capabilities as well as the tent, which is to cause disruption and sow societal panic, especially in the event of a military conflict or an election, just saying, and concluded Beijing will not back away from that in the future. Of course not. The end result is that China has moved beyond the traditional goal of nation-state hacking operations into adversarial actions, which is much more sinister. The shift in mindset is coming by techniques that could be emulated by other foreign adversaries. While Microsoft surfaced the threat of Volt Typhoon, it didn't register with the larger public until January when the Justice Department revealed the group had hacked into hundreds of home and office users, allowing the Chinese government to access their data. If the end goal objective, as it appears that we've unraveled from the PRC, is to have placement access to the United States for an attack at the time of their choosing, they are going to continue down that path. There you have it. So, new tradecraft, the new tradecraft stuff specifically in here talks about basically retooling after law enforcement action, new tactics, and basically that they're not leaving critical infrastructure. So not good for the home team, but concerning for sure. So they're there, they're in, they're not going anywhere. They see that this is a strategic national value for themselves, and they are trying to prepare for a coming activity. I think we've jumped the shark on whether or not we are under what you could consider active attack from our adversaries, specifically Russia and China. I mean, like I said earlier, with the little bit that I read through, if you took the line items for justification of warfare and put them against this stuff, they line up pretty nicely. And then China's staying where they're staying because they are looking to sow political discourse and societal panic and all those things. So, yeah, the U.S. can't get through an election cycle without losing our fucking minds. But China and Russia are playing the long game, and we're sitting here with our collective wieners in the wind. Not good for us, folks. Collective wieners in the wind. That would be a weird sight to see. Anyway, quickly about RSA. Good show. I was glad to see that there was lots more people who didn't look like me that were running around. Like, it wasn't just middle-aged white dudes with beards. There was a lot more of the, I don't know what you say anymore, like, not guys, women, fair sex, ladies. I don't know. I don't know what you say. Well, whatever I can say without causing someone to get upset. There was a lot more folks of different ethnicities and minorities. I ran into a lot of folks from international places. So overall, that was good. A lot of the panels that I saw were multicultural, multi-diverse, those things. We need it. We need more people. We need not just a, you know, white ex-military bearded people like myself. So that was great. San Francisco is still a hellhole. It is the Walking Dead. And it's sad to go to such a great city and see one in pretty much every three or four businesses is shuttered because people were just robbing them blind. And as long as it's less than $1,000 worth of theft, they can just walk out. I was going into a Walgreens and saw somebody go in, grab some stuff of the three things that weren't locked up and walk right out. And the security guards that were standing at the door just were like, yep, that's how it goes. We can't do anything. I don't know what the purpose of the security guard is, but they just let them walk right out. And I kind of felt stupid because I actually paid for my stuff. I should have just taken the free shit. Anyway, and then the last piece was I was actually glad that the amount of marketing around AI was not as bad as I suspected it to be. So for all those marketers out there that we typically beat up, you know, good job. There was a lot of AI stuff, but it was not crazy, over the top, ridiculous, whatever. So whoever got the memo, somebody did, you did a better job at it. Now, I would still say, from my perspective, and I talked to a bunch of other CISO type people, vendors should still be letting people demo their software. Like, a video recording is not a demo. If someone wants to check out your software, let them do it. And if you can't, that's a problem. I don't think I'm going to Black Hat or DEF CON because it's hot as shit and I have no desire to be in Vegas at that time of year, but we'll see. Other than that, it's back to the regular old work and stuff. If I can help somebody with something, please let me know. As always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. I'll catch you on the next one.
Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.